All right, this episode is sponsored by Seed. Small actions can have big benefits, like how taking care of your gut can support whole body health. Who would have thought that, right? I mean, I do it now. I got probiotics and prebiotics, and let me tell you, they're easy to take, and they make my digestion go very smooth, all right? Taking a Seed, I can feel the difference in my digestion, and I stay healthy, healthy gut. You have no idea how much this stuff helps with. If you're healthy gut, it's almost like, you know, you keep your engine clean, the whole car's going to run well. And the Seeds DS-01 Daily Symbiotic benefits your gut, your skin, and heart health in just two little capsules a day. And the Seeds patented capsule-in-capsule design means fragile bacteria can survive the journey from shipping to your doctor to where it works best in your body. So it gets to where your body really needs it to keep you healthy, all right? All without synthetic or chemical coatings, baby. Trust your gut with Seeds DS-01 Daily Symbiotic. I want you to go to seed.com/thecast and use the code 25 the cast. That's all one thing. The number 25 the cast to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seeds DS-01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/thecast. Code 25 the cast. All right, everybody. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes it's nice to recharge that social battery, you know? Do you have any feel like you need a recharge? And how might you go about it? That's what BetterHelp is good for. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It just tightens you up, you know? If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. How great is that? And it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You know, I mean, there are times I wish I could talk to somebody, but when I'm ready, with BetterHelp, that's what this is, baby. So find your social sweet spot, really, with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Pete today to get 10% off your first month. BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, that's simple. BetterHelp.com/Pete and find your social sweet spot, baby.
This is the Pete and Sebastian Show with Pete Corielli and Sebastian Maniscalco.
Bro, we got a lot to get into. Guys, this is a monumental day here.
This is unbelievable.
On the Pete and Sebastian Show, we have... And guy, I got to tell you, before we even get into it, bro, we just bringing this up. We thought you would just need... I mean, like, we didn't even ask you if you needed it, but right away he knows what to do.
Look at this,
Bro.
He goes with the brown. I knew he'd go with the brown, sugar. I go with brown.
So I just want to prepare you. You're going to get complimented a lot today.
All right. It's going to be awkward, Andy.
Yeah, it's going to be awkward.
Mr. Garcia.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Pete, what do you think?
I got to see how old I use that.
We need to know. We need to know how you drink espresso.
We don't have the pinky up or not.
Yeah. Listen, let's just brass tacks. You're the coolest person I have ever seen or known and now met in my entire life. I do things in my life and I think, how would you do them? All right? I mean, and you're not letting me down in any capacity. It's unbelievable. And now I'm going to be professional and not make you feel uncomfortable the rest of the show.
That's one of us.
Didn't know you could lick the espresso spoon, but now that Garcia did it, I can lick the foam of the espresso after the stir. I thought I had to. Beautiful. Learn right. As we go.
Listen, the fact that you got a pocket square on for a podcast is... I don't think I've ever seen that on a podcast. No. And the fact that...
You know, this thing just lives in there. It never comes out.
I don't care what it is. It's just...
It was sewn in.
And you don't even... from our research, and correct me if I'm wrong, you don't even... Have you ever done a podcast?
Yes, I have.
You have?
I did one with Marin.
Oh, Mark Marin.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. Yeah.
And
But even interviews, I don't see you. You're like Michael Jackson when it comes to interviews. Right. I mean, I think the last time you were on a talk show was Conan O'Brien, maybe 10, 12 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. But I generally, you're like a unicorn. Right. You generally don't see you like out and about.
Right? No, I don't got it. I do, you know, I support the things I'm in, you know, and I've been on Kimmel a number of times, and Conan when he's around, Craig Ferguson, who I loved. I think he was one of the most talented guys out there.
Yeah, but Craig Ferguson has been gone for years, bro. Yeah. I'm telling you. I'm telling you.
I was 13 when I did the show.
But you're on a level. What's it like to be on the level where they say, Mr. Garcia, if we make this for you, will you go on the late night shows? And you just go, I might not.
No,
like,
well, always,
well, we'll still make it.
I appreciate it.
I mean, come on. No.
I don't. Listen, I don't, by nature, I'm not an antisocial individual at all. But I do tend to socialize, you know, on a more personal level with people, not so much out in the fanfare.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do the talk shows when appropriate, you know. What do you, you know, if I have something to support and you want to support.
Yeah.
It, as you know, it's very hard to make a movie. You know, I make a lot of independent films and they need all the support they can get if you don't have a studio really behind them. So you want to let people know you're proud of the work and, you know, this thing is coming out. So you go out and it's not painful. I just don't feel like I need to be out there talking about myself.
You don't need to be. And, you know, exactly. And I'm just saying that the fact that you're here is mind-blowing. We got a lot to get into.
But as far as the TV pro, I just want to say, like, you know, you take City Island, which was amazing. The one my wife and I watched like maybe 2 years ago, Middleton, where you're a Vera.
At Middleton, yeah.
Andy and Vera, I'm sorry with the last name.
Farmiga.
Beautiful the way he rolls the tongue. But anyway, they're dropping their kids off at this college, and then over the course of a day, they fall in love. I mean, only Andy could pull this movie off. I mean, and I'm watching the whole thing. But like, to my point, you don't need to do the talk shows, because when we scroll through on the Netflix and stuff, you go, who's it? Oh, Garcia. It's not a, should we watch it? It's, how did we not even know this came out?
Well, you know, it goes back to, first of all, I'm really proud of those movies because I also produced them. So, but there were small movies, you know. Yeah. At Middleton, we made for $2.5 million, and at City Island, we made for like $5.5 million. So those movies, as you know, when you do an independent film, they got to find their way, you know. And then if you make those movies because the scripts are good and you want to do them, so they usually get picked up and swallowed up in the system. But do they get $30 million behind them in advertising and stuff? It's rare that one can really break through. It's not a judgment on the quality of the film. It's more about the nature of the story, how wide can it be released, and also if the distributor doesn't really have the money who bought the movie to really promote the thing, then you just said the word of mouth. Like City Island was in the theater for 24 weeks without an ad in the paper.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Just by word of mouth. Word of mouth. It just stayed in the theater. It wasn't 22,000 theaters, but it was, you know, in a couple of theaters in New York, a couple in LA, and just people kept showing up.
And not only was that movie great, but I lived in the city at the time for like 22 years, and we didn't even know. Like, we passed City Island, but we never bothered. So now we
inside.
Got in the car, we went, and you know, and it's just one strip, and they got all these seafood joints. When we go and you're playing the garden, we got to go to City Island. Oh, it's a real unique place.
I found that to be true when I was doing the movie in Manhattan, that a lot of people didn't even know where City Island was.
Right. Something you just passed.
Yeah. Or didn't even know it was there.
Yeah. Yeah. So phenomenal movie. So many of them.
I want to jump in. And you told me this.
You're part of this show?
Yeah. I got to calm him down. Sorry. Jesus Christ.
I'm done. I'm taking a break.
I want to get into the scene in The Godfather 3. And we talked about this. I think at a basketball game, the scene in the red robe, right, where you come out in this red robe, and the guy's got a nylon over his head, right? There's two guys that break in, and he comes out of the bedroom with this red robe on, and I gotta tell you, after I saw that scene, I was in a robe for 4 weeks after that. Yeah. And he's got the guy by the head with the gun, and I've never seen in my life, because I would, and we talked about this on the cast, we talked about it yesterday. If you're wearing slippers when somebody comes over to give you an estimate, on like painting your house, and if you're in slippers, I feel like I'm at a disadvantage, right? But you pull off wearing a robe, and he was scarier than the guy with the nylon, right?
Yeah, I know, absolutely. So if I was the holding
picture,
look at this. I mean, the guy got a nylon on. I've never seen a guy in pajamas right. pull this off. Now, Andy, tell us the story about this scene where is a lot of this. I don't do. Obviously, as much acting as you do, is when you're in these moments, is this scripted? Is this improv? To grab the guy by the head like that, are you being told to do that, or is this something that happens in the moment?
It's been a long time, so you kind of whether I said what because there's a stuntman here involved. First of all, I had to take the sock off his head.
That was amazing.
And then I had to grab him. I figure I'll grab him by the hair. And I have to ask the stuntman, hey, listen, are you okay if I grab you by the hair? And this stuntman was amazing. And he would go like, yeah, man, grab me by the hair. He was like, this guy was all in. And then you go through the scene. It's kind of blocked because this is, this stuff is dangerous. And unfortunately, in that scene, if you watch the movie, we only did it. There was one take where I go like this. And then there's a close-up with a fake head, one where I go like that and I take the thing off his head and then I grab him and he says something and I kind of give him a whack, right?
Yeah, with the gun.
I got a little bit too close and I nipped the back of his head. And if you watch the movie, you'll see right there when I hit him, watch my mouth, I go, oh! Watch.
Wow.
So of course they dialed that down, But so we did one take, and then after I said cut, and I went, hey man, you're right, I'm sorry. And he goes, no man, that was wild. So he was totally into it. So I said, okay, that's enough. Listen, we don't need to do that again. But those kind of things, they happen sometimes, even no matter how careful you are. It was very well organized and protected, but I did clip him a little bit.
Look at the necklace.
I know. Is that a character choice with the cross? To have it that
the hair is mine.
The hair is yours. I get it. Just to have the cross that deep into the chest. It's just phenomenal. So there's a lot of these scenes that you do in the movie. And Pete, you got one in Black Rain. When he's well, go ahead.
Phenomenal movie, obviously.
Yeah. So but anyway, this was kind of designed. The scene was, Francis staged it, but you're kind of, when you're in it, you're in, you're doing your thing. But he's saying, okay, these are the beats in the scene, and you're gonna let her go. And by the way, Bridget Fonda was extraordinary to work with, and that's my coat she's wearing. That's my coat, and initially, they wanted her to be, naked. And she was very nervous, and I said, no, she's not going to be naked. No, come on, this is,
It's even better with the coat.
Yeah, it's a great call,
absolutely.
And I said to Milena Cananera, I said, Milena, why doesn't she just wear my leather coat? It's on the bed, it's on the floor.
Beautiful.
Let her come out with my coat. And she went, oh, beautiful, yeah, let's do that. And now, they taped it so it wouldn't open up and stuff like that,
This is a great actor. I'd be doing it as I'm hitting him, in the scene, I've been thinking, oh, she's going to call the cops as soon as I say cut. But you're just in it. You're like, and you've always had that passion. And I wanted to ask you, in Black Rain, for some of the younger people out there listening, phenomenal movie with, again, Michael Douglas, every person you work with, you're like, is there another legend in this or am I the only one?
Ridley Scott, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When you the scene where you get beheaded, okay? And you take your coat and you start doing the matador.
Yeah.
Is that you? Is that
Yeah, script? That was mine.
Oh, my God. Now, how did he not go cut? Like, if I was Ridley Scott, like, the matador with the coat. Holy shit.
No, but that was set up in the at the beginning of the movie when Michael picks me up on the streets of New York. That's where I set it up. Oh. As like a ritual. Because what happened, this is a curious scene, because what happens here was talked about before we did the scene with, the first opening scene. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we knew that I had this kind of propensity to play matador because of Michael. So when I saw him, I engaged, and you know, and then we went talked about. Then he'll take my code, and then I'll run after the code, and it became a whole thing. But it was set up from the beginning of the movie, and it was an idea I had, the Matador thing. Yeah.
Did you have the idea for it at the beginning as well?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, man. Oh my goodness. I mean, like, you don't even know what you get.
I got to come here more often.
Seriously, that was like, I mean, him as a kid, a younger, watching that, you know, and then Michael Douglas can't get through the gate. There's nothing he can do.
It's like, oh, so here, this is fun. You know, it's like behind the scenes thing. So if you go to the head cutting off and you freeze that just before it goes. And he comes, and then I'm on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. And then as the head, I mean, I've talked about this before, but this is great because you have a visual, people. So, and you see this position I'm in. Now, as soon as you cut back to me, keep going. That's still me. That's still me. That's still me. That's not me, obviously. That's not my head. But what you see, what happened was we did a cast of my head. You know, like with an open mouth like that, and you know, they put you in a full cast. It's very uncomfortable. And then it came to the set for that beat right there. So my head is behind that head.
Oh wow!
So
we got two heads.
So we have two heads. It's behind that head. Exactly. So what happened was we were trying to figure out how to you know do the cut with Ridley, and I'm kneeling down at that point, and I said, Ridley, and I saw a camera all the way like on the floor, like 50 yards or 30 yards away, on the floor with a long lens. He had one camera there, which is that angle. And I said, Ridley, what if I get on my knees like this and I'll put the head on my chest like here, I'll hold it with my teeth. You know, by the hair, and I'll just be like that, and the camera's this way, you won't see my other head, and as the thing, he goes over my head, because it's really after, it's for after, I'll just fall back, and the head can fall forward, you know, and hopefully you won't see my head, and that's how it was done, and we did two takes, because the first one, the head rolled like that in between my legs, and I went like that, and it was looking right at the camera. So I said, oh, we got to go again. You know? It just rolled at itself, and we're like, hey, close up.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
I had trained my head for the close up. You know?
This episode is sponsored by Seed. Small actions can have big benefits, like how taking care of your gut can support whole body health. Think about that. Taking care of your gut, whole body health. It all works together, man. I've been taking prebiotics and probiotics. You're probably wondering, what's the difference between a pre and a pro? A probiotic is a biotic that gets paid. Oh, can I get a drum roll? Seriously, no. I take them. And it really helps with my digestion. It keeps me regular, and it just keeps my digestion feeling well. So I take the seeds twice a day, once in the morning and then once at night. I take mine with an espresso both times. I know, I'm having espresso late at night. It's ridiculous, but you can have it with anything, glass of water, whatever. Your body is an ecosystem, and great health starts in the gut. It's like keeping an engine clean in the car. Your gut is the central hub for various pathways through your body. Everything's going through the gut, man. And a healthy gut microbiome, I can't pronounce that, but it means a healthy gut means benefits for digestion, skin health, heart health, your immune system, and more. Seeds DS-01 Daily Symbiotic benefits your gut, your skin, your heart health, and just as I said, two capsules a day. And Seeds patented capsule and capsule design means the fragile bacteria that you need, it can survive the journey from shipping to your door to where it works best in your body. So it gets in your body and starts working where it needs to be working inside your body, all without synthetics or chemical coatings, man. So trust your gut and go with Seeds DS-01 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/thecast and use the code 25thecast. That's all one word, number 25thecast, to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seeds DS-01 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/thecast. And use the code 25thecast. Get on it. Get that gut nice. All right, what's up, everybody? This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes we could all use a little recharge in the social battery. And how do we get there? Well, it's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the better version of yourself. All of this is done by BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched and a licensed therapist. And switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. That's great. You fill out a little form, and then they set you up with a therapist that they think is right for you. So you find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Pete today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Pete. And find your social sweet spot.
So let me ask you this. In a moment like that, do you take the head as a souvenir? Because now you told me you took the red rover.
The red rover somewhere.
Do you take the head home?
I think I have the heads in a box. No.
Bro, I'd have that head on like a mantle.
No, it's actually the actual head. If Tom Berman was the special effects makeup guy on Magnolia Boulevard in Burbank, I believe it was Magnolia or Burbank Boulevard. He might still be there. He had the head on the shelf, the plaster, you know.
He's got it?
Well, you go in there and you see a bunch of heads, you know. Yeah. And I'm the one with the open mouth and going, you know, I just died.
Man. Okay.
But, I mean, that was a crazy movie in that, you know, with Ridley. He was cool, man. He gave us a lot of space to work, Michael and I. Gave us a lot of freedom, you know. Gave us, you know, ideas that we'd come up with. They go, him, you know. Sherry Lansing produced it, and Stanley Jaffe was her partner, and they were very embracive, and they, you know, things that I brought to the table, they went there's a sequence in there where we sing a song with Ken Takakura, the Japanese actor, and we sing a Ray Charles song, and so the scene wasn't designed like that. It was designed that we would sing in a karaoke bar, but it was in the script. There was we lost our loving. That loving feeling. And they had just sung that song in a Tom Cruise movie.
Right, yeah.
And I went said Sherry, and I said, you know, this is, if I'm going to get up there and sing that song, people are going to walk up and get popcorn. I mean, it's not going to be very exciting.
Yeah.
I said, why don't we do this Ray Charles? I have an idea. Why don't we do this Ray Charles thing? You know, what I say, and I'll bring Ken Takakura up with me, put him his sunglasses, I'll put him on like Ray Charles. I'll teach him how to do it. And he can sing because this guy is such a serious character in the movie, and when I die I have to leave him with something, you know, and what I leave him with is him coming out of his shell, you know what I mean? So it gives like an emotional handoff to him. So I really said, oh great. And then he said, what do you need? And I said, just a piano player and Ken. So he says, work it out and then show me. So we went to a studio here in the Valley, the Debbie Reynolds studio, and me, Ken, and a pianist. And we worked out the bit like it's in the movie. We're mm-hmm. sitting down. I pull him by the tie. I bring him up there. And then I call Ridley. I said, Ridley, we ready to show it to you? And he came in with I think it was Jean Dubon was with him, the DP. And we ran it once. And he went, wow. That's how he always goes like that. He goes,
oh, that's his thing?
That's his thing, yeah. Wow. And we shot it, you know. So really, you know what I'm saying? It was like an evolution of things that happened in that movie. And listen, Ken Takakura at Rap gave me his watch. I'm still wearing it.
That's it?
Yeah. Oh. You see, he has his name on the back.
Baby, it's all right. Baby, it's all right. Wow.
Still wearing it.
So that watch is kind of well known in the Rolex world because it was Ken's watch and it has a particular bezel that's not normal to him. But he gave it to me, you know, and I was wearing, I had a small Oyster Perpetual also, and I took mine off and I said, give it to him. And he went, no. And I said, well, you can give me your watch. I can't give you my watch. He says, no. You know, in their culture, if you give, you cannot receive kind of thing. He said, no. And he insisted I take it. I still wear it to this day. And
that's crazy.
How long was that? 30 years ago.
Yeah, that had to be.
Wow.
You're working, I mean, with a lot of people over your career. Has there Has there been anybody that you've kind of been starstruck that you're working with maybe early on? You're like, I can't. Maybe you called home going, guys, you're not going to believe who I'm in a movie with. Or when you're doing this, is it?
Well, I would say the first experience I had with someone that, you know, that I had seen on television, you know, in films, and he was already a very established actor, was Jeff Bridges. And the thing about, and Hal Ashby, who directed it, was a hero of mine as a, you know, aspiring actor. And when I met Jeff, he dismantled any issues about I'm the star and you're the thing. It was like everybody, it was like, hey, man, welcome. And I, to this day, I remember him saying, hey, if there's anything you see that I should be doing, just let me know.
Oh, wow.
And I said, likewise, man, likewise. And that was it. And we played antagonists in that movie, but we were like, became the best of friends throughout the movie, you know? Mm. And it's a lesson learned even for young actors, because sometimes people confuse the method, which is like, you know, I'm in character. I don't like you in the movie, so I'm not going to like you for the next 45 days. Go fuck off, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, some people work that way, and it's like the space, and you want to do that. That's what you need to do. But I feel that the deeper the generosity and respect for the fellow actor in a scene, in the process, in the creative process, the deeper the love, the deeper you can go into the hate, because you're going in together. So we trust each other that I can do whatever I want to you and you can do whatever you want to me. And it's all in the spirit of the work. You know, it's not personal to you as a person. Well, maybe to you as a person. You know, if I don't really like you, but that, how often does that happen? You know, where you really don't like somebody and that somehow feeds you into the thing. It's more about the work, you know, and Jeff had that thing right away. And that was a great lesson to me as a young actor, because Jeff said he felt that he was always the most important supporting actor in the movie, because he's there every day and people are coming in to do one scene, three, and he needs to be supportive of that person coming in, and therefore the work gets elevated. Mm. If you feel like, oh, you're just this guy coming in, don't bother me, I'm not doing my off-camera lines, and, you know, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, all right.
You know what I mean, so.
Well, you know, I if I can ask you, though, when you're acting with someone, I know you've been married a long time, you know what I'm saying, me too, him, I'm a comedian, and sometimes, like, I'll tell my wife about a joke I don't like. Do you ever go home, and I'm not asking to name an actor or anything, but do you ever go home to your wife and go, this guy I'm acting with, he's making a choice, it's driving me nuts. Like you don't like the choice the actor made in the movie with you, but you can't.
No.
No.
No. I mean, sometimes she'll say, how's it going? How is so-and-so? How is the director? And then you go like, oh, it's all right, you know, because somehow it's not grooving as well as you'd like. Yeah. But no, I don't think I've never had any animosity that with anybody, you know. I mean within the work, yes, yeah. You know, but never.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you know, they're making a choice as the actor, you know.
I'm there to react to their choices.
No matter,
you know,
what it is.
Whatever what it is. Man. I'm looking after my character, and you can throw whatever you want my way. You know, it's my job to, you know, take it, you know, it up. Take it, have a reaction to it.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, a lot of people over the years, it was curious. For me, a lot of people, but it's been going on for years. People thought that or assumed that me and Richard Gere did not like each other in internal affairs.
Oh, great movie.
And then I said, no, I have total respect for Richard. It was a very dark movie. And he was staying in character and I was staying in character while the work was being done. And therefore, that energy is what you see. But I don't have any dislike for him whatsoever. I have total respect for him.
Right.
And I consider him a friend, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And we've seen each other after. But people feel that, because also sometimes people are on the set and they feel, whoa, something's going on here. What's going on here? Mm-hmm. And they're witnessing it, you know, whether they're a grip or whatever. And they'll go home and say, oh, those guys don't really like each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, those guys we're playing don't really like each other, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
He's, you know, he's doing things to this character that's really messing with his mind. So anyway, that's, you know, sometimes reputations are based on observations. People don't know really the true story to something.
Yeah.
Here's what I want to ask you. And it's the vulnerability you have. You're almost on like the brink of tears. And then there's like an explosiveness, like an anger that I don't know what you said in this movie. It was in Spanish, right? And I can't find the clip. I would have brought it up there. It was like, Athena mía.
That's from Internal Affairs, I think.
Is that Internal Affairs? Yeah. Damn it. I thought, okay. So
that. It was with my wife. See, the Gear character has got me.
Okay.
I think he's screwing my wife.
Yeah.
And he's got the panty. He gives me
the panties. Oh, that's what right. I was looking. I thought it was the other movie. Right. Okay.
Internal Affairs panties. Look,
what? So when we saw that movie, my buddy George back home, and you said that in Spanish. I don't know what it was, but it's literally been our. We say that every once in a while when we get on the phone, when we get angry, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I want to know what. Yeah, here it is.
Yeah. And that's the director, Michael Figgis, Nancy Travis.
I said not here.
Not here. Why not here? Why not here? Who'd you have lunch with?
Do you do this at home? I mean, like, or is this just like,
just this morning.
No.
I have this miniature poodle that this is the exact same conversation I had with this dog. And I was, I wasn't asking about lunch, I was asking about, why, where did you put that shit that you always take and hide? You're always carrying around and hiding it somewhere.
Well, I mean, like, I know it's acting, but I mean, the way you explode with this, with the anger you have, it's just like, just play it out. I know it's uncomfortable probably to watch it, but or you might love it. I don't know.
By the way, Nancy Travis, what an amazing actress. She's amazing. What a great partner she was.
What does that mean?
You're gonna lie to me? You're gonna lie to me?
Oh God! Oh. Finally, after 30 years, you're gonna lie to me? God damn! Yeah, man.
Yeah, you see, Richard Gere's character really had this guy all twisted up.
Yeah.
He had him twisted up.
Incredible.
The passion. Oh man.
So we read that your family was in the perfume business.
Still are.
Okay. Do you wear cologne every day?
Not for free, buddy. I have to buy my own fragrance.
Yeah, but like today, do you have cologne on?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so you don't wear cologne.
I don't. I do now. I after this show.
Can you tell us your favorite cologne?
It's a Guerlain Imperial Extra Dry.
Wow. Write that down. Write that down and let's get a box to the house.
I'm still focused on the watch. I need somebody, a friend, to give. You got to give me something that I wear the rest of my life. I mean, how cool is that? A gift like from someone of that ilk too, that level. My gosh.
Okay.
Why do I wear that? Is that a
no
question?
No. I just want to know if you wear cologne. Number two, I've met two of your daughters.
But I got to tell you why I wear their cologne. This is important.
Oh, go ahead.
That's what my grandfather wore. Wow. And he would pour it on his. Handkerchief every day. He was a very meticulous man, and he'd go like that, and then he put the handkerchief away, wherever it was. And during the day, when it's sweaty, remember we come from Cuba or Miami, where he eventually passed away. There, it's hot, so you have the handkerchief with the Guerlain, and you can.
You must be loving this move because you're all about colognes. This is unbelievable.
I've never heard of anybody applying the cologne. With a cloth. I didn't even know.
With a handkerchief.
Yeah, I didn't know that was possible.
But then you get a refresh all day long. It's unbelievable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the reason why, and this is goes to, I guess, just my love for him, is that it reminds me of him. So it's an homage to him.
That's great.
And I've never said this. I think maybe I've said this once, but you seem to be obsessed for a long time, both of you, about the pocket square.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's not just a pocket square. Okay? Because my daughters watch your show and you go, Dad, you got to watch this show. They've been talking about you for like 10 months. Yeah. And they want to know, what kind of underwear you wear, what's with the pocket square, and how does he work out? What weights does he use? The pocket square is an homage to my uncle and my father.
I like the, everything that you do has intention.
Yes, you know, it's amazing.
So I share that with you because I consider you a friend, and I know you guys have been curious. And
we have.
Just a little nugget I'm going to throw you.
We love the nuggets.
We do.
What a moment.
Listen, while we're still on that, can I ask one more while we're going down this comedic lane? Hotel pool. How does Andy Garcia get in? Do you do a jump? Do you slowly walk down the stairs?
Ladder.
You're getting up off the chair.
What age?
Now, you know, grown man, you know, of your level of class.
I have the capacity to both dive head first and or just wade in, depending
either
on
or.
The nature of the pool, you know, how many people are in it, how cold it is.
Right. Huh? I haven't done a dive in years. Now I got to do a dive. I'm going to dive thinking of you. I really am.
Make sure you check how deep it is. Okay.
Do you realize though, on some level, that like you're going to a store? Do you? And I know this is, you're going to say no because you're such a humble man, but you're going out to a store. Maybe you have on sweats. Do you have that moment where you're like, I'm Andy Garcia? There's an expectation. You know, like the way you dress now is exactly what we would expect. Just class.
Wherever I go, I just go in. I'm assuming that nobody knows who I am.
It's just how you live your life.
Yeah.
And it's like,
other than the four guys that came with me that are outside.
Well, where did you get your sense of style? Is this something that you?
That's all from my father and my uncle and my grandfather.
They always kind of dressed and presented themselves.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't about so much about, you know, because obviously we're exiles from Cuba. So we had, my father and mother had to begin a whole new life with three kids, like most exiles or immigrants, you know, with nothing. So even what they were able to bring over in one suitcase was their wardrobe. But it's the manner in which they respected appearance. And, you know, how they got up in the morning, how they left the house, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was a different era also, you know, and, you know, I'm not trying to be, you know, serious or point finger. It's just an honest answer to your question, basically.
Yeah, no, I grew up that way too. Like, you know, we're going out, put some nice clothes on, you know.
And
like,
you tend to be overdressed always in California. You know, so, but that's okay, you know. Some of us have to bring a modicum of class to the operation.
That's right. That's right. I mean, we were there was almost an over-under here betting whether or not you were going to wear a scarf here today.
I always wear a scarf, especially in the winter. I'm always cold.
You should see the way this guy dresses on the golf course.
You right? Imagine that.
It's just an amazing. It's like, who the hell is that guy? I didn't even know it was him. I was golfing with some guys. I go, who the fuck is that? And I said, Andy Garcia. He had like a fedora on. It really... It's almost breathtaking to see.
Right. I mean, you got to see it.
We
I know I see it from a distance. I know.
You do have and correct me if I'm wrong. Did you start in comedy? Were you doing comedy at one point?
I was doing, when I came to LA, amongst many other jobs, you know, waiting tables and loading trucks and stuff. I started taking classes. Right away, and one of the classes that I took, obviously I went to theater school in college, but I kept studying when I came here. I studied, sat in with everybody. I studied with Jose Quintero in a two-week intensive, the great director. You know, I sat in Stella Adler classes, in like actor studio classes. I sat into them, you know, ordered them because at the time I couldn't afford them, so. But I studied with a great actor, David Provall, who had a sort of Meisner class in town. That was very rewarding. But I also studied with people from Second City in improv and became a member of one of the house groups at the Comedy Store.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow,
For about 2 years. And then there was a big strike. I left town for a little bit, got married, come back. And I didn't go back to the improv in terms of, you know, live, but I applied those techniques to my work, you know, because it's all intertwined with Meisner and a lot of the things, you know, the availability, the idea that you don't have to know how the thing is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You need to know why you're there, and you need to know what you need and how high the stakes are or how low the stakes are. But how that's going to manifest itself like a starfish, you can come out to the center objective from many different angles, from take to take. As long as you achieve this objective, that furthers the story and of the movie and of your character. So that's kind of like the work in improv is never, you know, never deny anything that's said. You just take it and build upon it and keep building so the scene continues to have a exploratory energy and not a one that stops it. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you stop it, then you get, it's like a blackout. Turn the lights off. Next, it's like a joke.
Yeah.
Try not to tell jokes. At one point, I felt the room was getting too many jokes in the scenes and not enough scene work. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't as interesting to me to you know, just go for the laugh in a joke.
Well, it seems like everything
in a scene, to. In a scene anyway, let the scene be funny, but don't go for a laugh.
Yeah.
Well, everything you do is incredibly real. All your acting. It's like, you know, almost you. Like, I gotta be honest, when I watched When a Man Loves a Woman, it was so real. I'm yelling in my head at the TV, like, I can't, why are you still with this lady? She's nuts. Walk away. She's egging the car. She's ruining the paint, you know, and like, and you stick around. But it's like, it's just so real that I wonder when people work with you, you would never know if this, like, I bet they're stepping up their game because they're like, you know, the day before, they're like, listen, he may cry halfway through this shit. You got to be right. I mean, you're crying.
I don't know.
You could cry more at my mom's funeral than I would. That's unbelievable, Andy. Your level of crying, it's like famous. Oh,
okay, I got to get away. I got to get away from that a little for a while.
What, the crying or me?
Both.
What, do you get away from the crying?
No, I mean, you seem so obsessed with it. Maybe I've been hitting it a little bit too hard. Yeah.
No, you got away from an Ocean's 11. There was no tears in that one. No, yeah, tears. Phenomenal.
Thank you, man.
Never ends, bro. Never ends with you, sir.
Did you work at the Beverly Hilton as a banquet?
I was a banquet waiter.
Okay, banquet. Because I heard that. I worked at the Four Seasons Hotel.
And with the French service.
Yeah. Oh, you did the French service. All right. And
two forks, you know, like that. You know. There was many years after I was blessed to be honored with an award. I think, I'm not sure what it was. I think it was Father of the Year or something. Maybe it was Oscar de la Hoya's thing. Anyway, I was there and a lot of the waiters that I had worked with 20 years earlier were still there.
Wow.
Because they're career waiters. They're raising families. You know how it is.
Yeah.
You work that. And when I went on stage to get to the thing, there was, you know, like, I don't know, a couple dozen other guys knew me in the back waving their, napkins like this, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. That's
and really so I did it. And of course, I called them out and said, you know, and dedicated the award. But it was a very... It was interesting to see society, you know, from that other, from the service industry side of it, you know?
Yeah.
I had never been on the service side in my life. Yeah, I worked at a disco. I was a sommelier, you know, hey, how you doing? You want some wine? You know, it's a different atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah.
This is very formal and, you know, French service and, you know, very, you know, older couples. And to see the dynamic of how people in society treat the help, the waiters, the service people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very curious to me as an actor to understand that other side of it, you know, and how some people were expecting of service. Some people were very kind, very generous, thankful. Other people were not so thankful, you know, did not really value what you were doing or you know, you kind of get all those things. But I'll tell you this one story because I know this is a show supposed to be funny, but there's also interludes of real conversation.
So phenomenal.
And so I was having before the dinner, you know, they give you dinner as a waiter, right? You go in there, you prep your table, dinner time, and all the waiters are eating. You eat usually the same thing that they're going to serve in the banquet, watercress soup, chicken cordon bleu, you know, that kind of stuff. So I'm in there and I get my plate and I see one of the waiters that I've been working with there and, having his watercress soup like this, and as he was, you know, like he would go like this, he'd go, and then he would look, and he had this book, this coffee table book, open like it was the size of this, of your, but you know, when it's open, boom, thick, and I'm going like, what the hell? So I said, Alberto, can I sit down? I said, yes, por favor. And then I'm looking at him. I said, ¿Qué estás leyendo? He said, no, there's un libro. And he went like that and he turned. I said, what are you reading? And he says, oh, no, this is a book. And he kind of went like that and he put it so he can to show it to me. His thing was like this big and I'm going like that. And it was open to a thing and it was a map, like a 2-page diagram from above of the battle of Napoleon and Hannibal with the elephants and, you know, the archers and, you know, here. Yeah. And he started to explain to me why Hannibal won that war. And he took me through the whole strategy that had been written about. This was the diagram to study. And he knew it by heart. He said, this guy, the elephants came through here. And then one of them, you know, he's still eating his soup. And I'm going, this guy could teach this in, it's like a PhD in, you know, historical war.
Yeah.
And what that told me, and I said, you're like halfway through the book. And he goes, no, this is my second time. And this book was, so what does that teach you? You know, wow. It teaches you a lot about not judging a book by its cover. You know, just because you're doing this doesn't mean you're not an expert at that or have an interest in that. And you could be, you know, a serial killer, but you collect butterflies.
Yeah.
You
know? That's crazy.
So that's, those contradictions were interesting to me. And Gene Hackman, I remember, said that once, I heard years ago, said he always looks for a contradiction in the character, you know.
Wow.
So those are the things that kind of stick, you know, in your memory that somehow help you through life, you know.
I used to work front desk at a hotel in New York City, and there was a guy who worked, there was a little concession, it was a Southgate Tower across from the Garden, and there was a little concession stand, you can get gum and stuff in the lobby.
Right.
And the guy was like from India, foreigner, and, you know, it was a nice man. You had an opinion about him. But then one day I had a conversation with him. He was like an engineer back there, you know? And now he's in this little booth, but like so humble, you know? And again, you start to see someone in a different light, you know? But like, you know, you really don't ever know what's going on.
You don't know, man. You don't know. And people in life have secrets.
Yeah.
You know, good ones, bad ones, a secret hobby, secret, like in City Island, my character, what a lovely thing he wanted. He was a prison guard and he was secretly was obsessed, you know, with being an actor. He wanted to be an actor. But he couldn't tell anybody because people go, hey, fuck, hey, he wants to be an actor. You know, that guy, right? Hey, hold on a second. Hello. Hey, yeah. Sebastian says he wants to be an actor. What? Sebastian says he wants to be an actor. That's a magical fucking show. Look at that. Act this over here.
Right. We got a live eruption.
Oh my God, that's phenomenal.
Oh my God. Oh, anyway. So funny. But it's true, right? Yeah. Secrets, you know?
Yeah.
What's he thinking? What's going on with her? What's she got going on? What they hiding? What are they thinking of me when they're looking at me? You know? What are they really thinking?
Yeah.
That's always makes things, you know.
What is the secret? And I was trying to get to this earlier. You got a wonderful family and you're doing movies. What's the balance? And is there?
Don't bring them.
Don't bring them.
No.
Right? Because do you get distracted if you got your family? Do you normally bring them on set?
It takes me way too serious.
I'm looking for advice.
Yeah. No, I
you do these movies. You're away. Is there a point where you're going?
The balance is sometimes. Listen, if we're blessed as actors to be being offered work. To work, and you have a choice. If you have a choice of what you can do, you go like, I can do that thing which shoots in LA, or I only have to be away for 10 days, or this thing in Buenos Aires, you know, for 18 weeks, and I got to take all the kids out of school. And, you know, I go over here, you know, because I'm, you know, I'm a father first. I'm, you know, I don't walk around, you know, with a bell, I wake up, he goes, where's my coffee? You know what I mean? Yeah. You know. You know what I'm saying? So that's the choice. What you do, where you go. And for me, it's always like 2 weeks. Either I'm coming back for 4 days or you're coming with me, but more than like 10 days, not too good for me, for my family. I want to be there. I want to be present. And sometimes they go on the road, you know, they were young enough or someone go, oh, do you really want to pull them out for a month and take a home, you know, whatever. And my wife was like, no, just go and, okay, I'll be back. See, I can come back Thursday, you know, when we were doing Night Falls on Manhattan and with Sidney Lumet in New York, I commuted every weekend back to LA. Mm. And I was in every scene. So I just got, you know, Sidney would end very early on Fridays because he would go to the Hamptons. I get on the plane, come here, and then Sunday I go back to New York.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
And that's, taxing. But when you're younger, your body can take it better, you know?
Yeah.
Now it'll be, you know, it's harder to commute like that, you know, back then. Well, you do, you're on the road a lot, so you feel it. Your body feels it.
Yeah, no, believe me, my body is, I feel like I played football for 20 years.
Yeah.
So, God, what the hell was I going to ask
you? You were a kicker.
No. As an actor, do you ever feel... Or maybe early on, that it's going to go away. Like, I'm never going to get hired again. Is that always in the back of your head? Or are you so confident you're going, yeah, another gig's going to come?
I always felt, you know, once I was able to establish my work where people were, you know, aware of it, you know, I always felt there was another job. I don't know how long that would take.
Yeah.
But I always felt that it's been always reliable to me to know that sometimes you go like, well, there's, you know, it's like an ebb and flow. You're kind of like... The things that are coming by, you go like, oh, not really, you know, not really. That's not what, or if you have to do it because financially you have to do it, I go, okay, let's go. When are we? Okay, let's go. And you just do it because there are other reasons why you're doing it. And then you do your work like you always do. And
yeah. And
you're professional about it and you go home.
There's a looming fear.
It's going to go.
Unemployment.
Unemployment.
Yeah. Because it's so unstable,
it's
right?
It's unstable, yeah.
Like, I always look at my show I just did could be my last show because I don't know if anybody's going to show up the next day.
I got you. Yeah, I think that's inherent maybe in the sort of the natural pitfalls of the business we're in, you know? And if we're fortunate enough to, through the hard work that one can do, if you're fortunate enough or blessed really by... to invest or put money aside so when the call stopped coming because either were, you know, whatever it is, you have a bit of a nest egg to sustain yourself and move on to something else, you know.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
other creative things you do. I mean, right. Acting sometimes, unless you're doing a play, you're not doing it, you know, 12, you know, months out of the year. And there is an up and down and ebb and flow of employment.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other things in life other than just the work. You know, for me, there's a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Family, music, friendships, you know, golf, fishing,
passions,
you know, writing. I write, you know.
You also play, aren't you in a band? You play.
I'm having my own band, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, listen, the guys like this, you know, that have like a multiple like skill sets.
I know.
Right? Like, you know, yeah, it is, right?
Like kicker and punter.
Punter, yeah. Kicker.
This guy's on the level. You probably said no to Gilvalia. They probably want you to sponsor you. Like, give it to Colonia. I'm golfing and fishing.
Gibaldia?
Yeah.
Or like Nespresso or something?
Yeah. You don't even know what it is. He doesn't even know what it is. Holy shit. Oh, my God. Andy, I got to ask you, though, like, so when you...
I did do an espresso commercial with George. That was fun.
That's right. I do remember that,
man. That was fun.
I do. Even that, all of a sudden, what's this? He's in a commercial. You know, like, that has a sponsor ever come your way where you're like, I can't do it. Like, someone's, I'm not even saying what it was.
A sponsor, you mean?
Yeah, like to do a commercial where, like, they want you to be the voice behind something and you're like,
Maybe. I mean, I've done them. I've done commercials and one of my favorites was actually, they were looking to do 3 commercials in Italy. Representing, and you can see this on YouTube. You can probably see it right now. But anyway, it's a pretty funny.
Anyway, Garcia, Italy.
Yeah. That's not, luckily, that's a big file. Don't open up the file with the red dot in it. Yeah. No! So, this, you know what Averna is? Averna, the aperitif.
Yeah.
So Amaro Averna, no? And so they were doing 3 commercials where I was going to, there it is. Right there. You don't have to play a thing. Just look at the dude.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Dude with the muscle. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there, that guy there.
Don Salvador.
Yeah. Don Salvatore. Salvatore Averna. That's the character. So he's, see him? So that's me. So here's what happened. I had this beard for a movie I was going to do or just fit or was in the middle of something. And they called and said, could you be this guy? And, you know, they negotiate. And my wife says, did you tell him you have a beard that you look like Santa Claus to be this guy? And you can't shave it if they shoot the commercial? And I go, no, well, let's wait a second, see if there's a there's an actual deal that's really real. You know, once we close it, I'll say, and by the way, I have a beard. So that's a long story to set up the thing where he's, so my wife says, did you tell him? Finally, the deal closed. Did you tell him? And I said, no, I didn't have to, because as soon as the deal closed, they sent a photograph of me with a beard and said, oh, we would like Andy to look like this.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So I told that to my wife. She went like, oh, God. At least you got to shave that shit thing off.
Bro, the beard.
Things living in there. You know?
The beard is so perfect. When I first saw it, I thought it was fake. Right? Did you think that was a real beard?
No, I thought it was fake too.
But it was for the commercial.
We're talking at a level of
commitment to.
Well, you're at a level that you shave. You keep a beard for a job that falls through, but you get another one before you even got shaved. Oh God! Just call your agent. Get me something else with a beard. What a level! You don't even know what level you're at. I'm still freaking out that you're here.
Actually, you know, what I've been working on lately is that, you know, I'm clean shaven now, but I can actually just turn and concentrate really hard. And if I concentrate for like 4 or 5 minutes, it'll be about that length.
Oh, yeah.
The beard.
Oh, really?
It'll just grow like that on demand.
On demand, right? Yeah, no, this is Maverick every 5 days trying to get it. It's ridiculous. Yeah, no, you listen, don't change a thing. You're a man, bro. You should be on money. All right, go ahead. If I lived in Italy, I'd pay you money to start saying you're half Italian. Like if I was a president of Italy.
Well, Sicilian in this case.
Oh, man.
No, I was, like you know, there was, have you ever seen this thing on the internet? I encourage people to look it up. It's a people revoice the very famous scene where Bruno Ganz is playing Hitler, great German actor, and he's in the bunker and he has all his guys around him. So people go in there and redub the scene. And instead of saying, you know, Hitler, they're coming, we're going to die soon. The ships are coming, they're approaching, they're only 2 miles away. They put different scenarios and redubbed the whole thing.
Oh.
And one of them was where they talk about the Miami Dolphins and back in the day where they say there's, Hitler was going, we need to suck for luck. Andrew Luck was the quarterback. We need to suck for luck. So they did one where they're breaking the news to Hitler that I am not Italian. I swear to God. I don't know if you can find it, but don't, you have to see it now. Just people will see it when they see it.
Oh, yeah.
So they're saying, and he starts losing his, you know, his fingers start twitching. That's he starts right. losing his mind. Right. And he finally says, you can't be. Maybe just his mother is Italian. Search, someone search who his mother is. You know, like, oh, shit. Oh, crazy. Or the father, the mother. Anyway, this thing, so... someone sent it to me, and I just said, this is fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And so I sent it to Francis.
Oh, yeah?
You know, who cast the guy wasn't Italian in the movie, right? And he just wrote back, you're not Italian? But the reality, that's Francis, you know, because if you look at The Godfather, Brando's not Italian, Jimmy Caan's not Italian. I mean, there's a lot of people who are not Italian in the movie that are respecting and playing, the, you know, the culture. So I was blessed that he, you know... And I got that opportunity.
Do you just get a call for that and go, you want to be in The Godfather?
Oh, no. That's a whole other podcast. That's a whole other story. That goes on forever. It goes on forever.
Oh,
Process of getting it, yeah.
So you got to read and you got to do this and you got to do that.
It started because I had done a bunch of movies at Paramount, you know, The Internal Affair. And I'll tell it as quickly as possible. On the set of Internal Affairs, having lunch, Frank Mancuso, the producer, this junior, said, hey, Pops being the head of the studio, Mr. Mancuso said, he wants to come to lunch, he wants to talk to you. And I go, so I had done Black Rain and Internal Affairs, Dead Again, Black Rain, and The Internal, this is like my fourth movie with them. And he came to lunch and he said, this is like May or March, April, around there, May. He says, what are you doing in September? Because I'm going to talk to Francis. I want you to be play Vincent in The Godfather. And then now it's already been, you know, rumored and all that right now. And I'm going like, wow, maybe I can get a shot at this part. I want to audition for it, you know, as every actor would want to play. And I said to him, he said in September, and I said, let me check my calendar. I'll get right back to you. See, and he started laughing. I said, no, I said, I'd be honored to do it. But, you know, as you know, the history of The Godfather, the studio's suggestion on telling Francis who to cast, it's a long list of people he did not. He always wanted Al, and he always wanted people that the studio, Randall, they didn't want him. So I was the studio. I was the studio choice now. But that went on forever, the whole summer, and people were going into screen tests, and I'm like, not even meeting Francis. And I tried to, you know, I said, let me just audition for the guy. I'm not looking for a handout, you know. And he said, don't worry, they're gonna take it easy. They're gonna, the studio. I go, yeah, studio, but people are going in there. There's just one more guy that can just, Francis says, I want that guy. And I'm still waiting for the call, you know?
Yeah.
So eventually I met him once in the summer, Francis, like this one-on-one, and he was, you know, meeting like Zeus, you know? And he was incredibly kind and bright, and it was very easy. Meeting, I remember taking a lot of notes on one of those early laptops, IBM, I think it was. And I would talk to me, and then he'd go,
Do you ask him, what are you writing?
Yeah, what are you writing? And I would just go like, exclamation. So then I left, and then on a Thursday, before Labor Day weekend, he said they're starting rehearsal in September. I still haven't screen tested. I get a call Thursday to fly up to Napa to test, get there, spend the night, test Friday, and then leave Friday night. So I went and tested. I was like the last guy in, and tested with Madeline Stowe, who was incredible working with her. And then I said that was it. I started getting undressed to leave, and there was a knock on the door, and they said, Francis would like you to stay for dinner.
Oh my God.
And then, I'm putting on, you know, my pants, I got my pants coming up, and the guy's going, yeah. And then by the time I got dressed and I was about to leave the little room they had for me, the door opened again. It's just been a change of plans. You can go ahead and go home.
I would, you know what I would have said?
That really happened.
I'm invited to dinner.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to go. They knock on the door saying, forget it. Right. I'm thinking it's over.
That's what I'm saying.
Isn't
that what you thought?
Like, oh fuck, what'd I do? Or you just get up?
Yeah, I just went like immediately. I thought, I said, no, understood, no problem, because I felt that what I had done I showed him and how he responded. You know, the whole energy of the audition for me was very satisfactory, and I felt like I gave it. I was the guy, you know, in my thing, and it was at that point. It was out of my hands. There's nothing else I could do, and I'll accept the results kind of thing.
Right.
And then they called the next morning. I had to go back in the plane, and they woke me up on Saturday and said, hey, you got the part. You know, you got to get back on the plane and start rehearsal Monday. That was like, sort of like the first in by the studio, but the last in to meet Francis.
So he didn't want to admit that the studio got
it
right.
I don't know. He had his process, you know, and whatever relation, how he wants to do it, you know, I respect it, and I just wanted to have my shot, you know. Don't leave me, let me at least audition for it. You know, that's what I kept saying. Let me just audition for it. I don't need to.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
Let me take a shot.
Unbelievable
right?
story.
Try to hit the green.
How long have you been golfing?
I started when I was 12 for a couple of years, like during the Arnie's Army days and Chichi Rodriguez and, you know, Trevino. The Trevino was a little later, but we played in the park and sneak out on the course. I have like four clubs and carry them, you know. But that was only a couple of years because I was playing other sports, you know, in high school and stuff. But then I picked it up in 85 and I started playing, you know, like we do, you know, as an amateur.
When you mark your golf ball,
mm-hmm.
what do you put on it? Is it your initials? Is it a dot?
They come pre-marked already.
Does it say Garcia or is it AG? What is it?
It's AG, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. If I was golfing and your ball came near me, you ain't seeing it. I'd go back to my friends. I got Garcia's ball.
But the thing is, it saves you the thing about going like that. I got a thing.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Or pick a number that nobody else can pick. You know, if you don't, But, you know, when you order balls, they say, you know, for an extra $5, you can put whatever you want on it. You go, put AG on it, so I don't have to worry about it.
Ever get the hole in one since?
I did.
You did?
Three times.
Three times?
Wow.
And recently, more like in the last 3 or 4 years.
Now, my dad got one, but he couldn't see the ball, and he was playing alone. There's a lot of, you know, but but with yours.
He couldn't see the ball go in, you mean?
Right. And he came over the hills like a par three. I don't golf, but yeah, and then it was in there.
So it wasn't like the golf gods came, you know, little golf guy came on the screen and went like this when he wasn't looking and put it in the hole and scurried off.
Yeah, no.
That can happen, you know, those golf elves.
He wrote a great email about it, sent it out to the family, like 13th hole, light breeze coming, you know, like that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, the whole setup.
And hole in one, no one there to see it, not even so-and-so on his balcony. And then my wife and I had that printed with a shot of my dad golfing.
That's
and
beautiful.
Put up on the wall. Now, do you have the ball from your hole?
No, I don't have anything like that. I do have this one memory where, which would have been the fourth and the first one. And it was so long ago, I don't remember, you know, did it really happen? Or is it something that I imagined that I dreamt when I was a kid? What if this would happen? And it just became like a dream that's in your head, you know? I don't know. I'd have to talk to the people that were there with me. Mm. So if Howie Shapiro is around, send me a text or get a hold of me. Let me know if this really happened, Howie. Howie's a great athlete, baseball player, football player, minor leagues, really. But anyway, we used to go to Hollover Beach Part 3. In like, you know where Sunny Isles is? Hollover, north of Miami Beach. You go like Surfside, 163rd, a little bit before that. And there was a par 3 you can play at night. They had it lit up. I don't think it's there anymore. Especially lights at night are not good for the turtles. Something you learned today. Lights at night, not good for the turtles.
Why, there's turtles on the golf course?
No, and the coast, you know, the turtles.
Oh, okay.
It distracts them from where the moon is. So when they hatch eggs, the turtle, little baby turtles, they hatch at a particular time of the year where the moon is low, and they can go to the moonlight, and that's what pulls them to the water.
Oh, okay. You know, you play Marco Island, and you stay in the hotel, and they go keep the shades closed because the turtles come. You know, come to the window. What the heck?
You know, by the fourth night, you're like passed out on the window. Still haven't seen a turtle. Ma, there's no turtles. When are the turtles coming?
Oh, man. Oh,
anyway, the dream was, you know, that I got a hole in one, and we all jumped, went crazy. And that dream is in my head, but I just don't know if it's true that I have. So I really don't count it because I got the dream. I count the dream. I'm not counting the hole in one because I, you know. But recently, I had after many, many years, I had three in like 3 years.
Wow!
Same right there at Lakeside, huh?
Oh yeah,
nice. You haven't had one yet, right?
Sweet fuck, I had one. My ball is when I hit it, no one knows where it goes. Because
we ran into each other at the thing. You were looking for your ball underneath that tree. You know, came right up to each other, you know.
So
and then you hit it. You hit it like it was hard to get out of that rough. And you hit it like 20 feet.
Yeah.
And I think I said to you, nobody saw that.
Now, was there a part of you like, oh, guys, you're going to ask me to sponsor him? You can't even keep it on the fairway.
Well, listen, we have to thank you for coming to do this show. This has been a dream of ours since we started this thing 10 years ago. Yeah, so we know you're a busy man. We really appreciate you taking time out to laugh with us.
You know what Bobby Duval said to me once? He said, never accommodate the camera. Let the camera accommodate you. So that's basically that camera. I see a lens looking right at me right there. Hi, I'm Andy Garcia, and you are watching the Pete and Sebastian Show.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Unbelievable.
All right, let's take a couple.
Literally one of the greatest human beings I've ever been in the presence of. It's not even kidding. It's just been an absolute honor.
The show has ended.
So, I don't know.
You could cry more at my mom's funeral than I would. That's unbelievable, Andy. Your level of crying, it's like
famous. Oh,
okay, I gotta get away. I gotta get away from that a little for a while.
What, the crying or me?
Both.